Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Asked and Answered.
Questions.
With Tom Opferman and Steelers Digest editor Bob Labriola.
All right, Labs, everybody's now had time to digest that loss to the Patriots. The rest of the NFL played. You're still in sixth place. You turn the page. You look forward to these next four games starting in Indianapolis. But the quarterback position is still drawing a lot of ire from the fan base. Mitch Trubisky played in the game against New England. It didn't go necessarily well for him, spurring fans chanting for Mason Rudolph. Do you think we're going to get a third quarterback thrown into the mix, or do you see them riding out Mitch until Kenny's healthy?
You know, if we were actually doing this looking at each other, I would have given you my shocked face when you said that there is Steelers fans who are unhappy with the quarterback situation.
I know, I mean, right? Who would have guessed
gee,
it?
When is that? Well, right. When has that ever happened? You know, I'm just going to try and recap, you know, some of Mason Rudolph's recent history with the Steelers. Okay. Now, yes, they are calling for a quarterback change. And I can imagine that, you know, those screams for a quarterback change will get louder, you know, with the first time a pass hits the artificial turf in Indianapolis on Saturday, or if there's another turnover that Mitch Trubisky is responsible for. But, you know, the way I'm looking at it, and then this is just my quote-unquote analysis, insight, guess, is that, you know, it's going to be Mitch Trubisky unless there's an injury to him. And, you know, if you go back with the Mason Rudolph, you know, he was the starter the season that Ben Roethlisberger needed elbow surgery. So, you know, which that injury took Ben Roethlisberger off the field halftime of the second game of the season. So Mitch Trubisky, please correct me, okay, if I make that mistake again. Mason Rudolph, one of them needs to change their first name so it doesn't start with an M. Too many M's. Mason Rudolph was the starter, you know, immediately after Ben needed the surgery, okay? 2019, he was going okay, I guess. He had a winning record, but then he got replaced by Duck Hodges. You know, whether that was justified or not, you know, I'm not here to try and explain that or speculate on that or anything. Whether that was justified or not, it happened. Okay. Then Mason Rudolph's next big chance came in 2021 when Roethlisberger was in the concussion protocol and the game was against the 0-8 Detroit Lions. That one ended in a tie. Okay. So it's not all Mason Rudolph's fault. I mean, I'm not implying that. I don't know a lot of the details behind why the coaching staff, the team lost faith in him, or even if that's accurate. But I think it's fair to say that there were a couple of situations that the Steelers turned to him and he didn't come through, or he didn't come through to the degree that they hoped and or believed that they needed. So now, you know, Mason Rudolph is seen as insurance. He very well would have, the Steelers would have, I won't say happily, but they would willingly have allowed him to leave as an unrestricted free agent. But he came back because, best as I could tell, he had no better offers. So I think it's fair to call him insurance, at this point? And, you know, when do you need insurance in an emergency? And so unless there's an emergency, I think that during this, the rest of this period where Kenny Pickett is unable to play, it will be Mitch Trubisky. Whether that's right or not, I have no opinion on that. I just think that's the way it's going to be.
Well, speaking of emergencies brewing, there seems to be one potentially at the outside linebacker spot with T.J. Watt in concussion protocol as we lead up to the Indianapolis game this coming Saturday. The process in which, you know, he was examined for a concussion in the New England game happened really early on in that game, Labs. That's all independently done. Steelers have no say in that process. It's an independent NFL concussion specialist who examines these players and clears them. And he was obviously cleared to play, or else they wouldn't have let him back in the game.
Right. And, you know, Mike Tomlin was posed these questions at his news conference, which was yesterday. We're doing this Tuesday morning, this podcast, because of the Saturday game. The Mike Tomlin news conference was moved up a day, so it was yesterday, Monday. And, he was questioned about this. And, you know, there was criticism, not necessarily during the actual news conference, but, you know, in the aftermath of that, you know, on social media, you know, how could the Steelers and Mike Tomlin allow T.J. Watt to play with a concussion, you know, those kinds of things, even, you know, the color of the visor that he was wearing. And as you mentioned, this is the way it happens. I mean, there are NFL affiliated medical people on each sideline. And there also are NFL spotters upstairs somewhere watching the game through binoculars. You know, I'm sure they have access to replay, the same network feeds as everyone else. Okay. And it is up to them. They're at their discretion when they think that they see something that needs to be checked out, because every time a player is injured and requires attention on the field, if the guy is down, for example, the group of people that go out there, that will include the team's training staff, the team's medical personnel on site, and the NFL guy for whichever sideline it's on. And that guy's out there. And he makes the determination, this guy needs to go in the concussion protocol, or this guy needs to be tested for a concussion or not. It has the team's training staff or medical people have no say in that. They can't say, no, he doesn't need to be tested, or no, he doesn't need to go. That's not the way it works. So if T.J. Watt, when he was injured on that first play of the game against the New England Patriots, my recollection is that it was announced as he is being evaluated for concussion symptoms, I think is the word they used. Okay. So, and that's done by the NFL guy. You know, it's not done by the team people. And so he made the determination that T.J. Watt was okay to return to play. The fact that he changed the visor, again, the color of the visor, that was not done hiding from the NFL people, okay? That happens. They're there. They see that. And so if they don't think that that's a big deal, or, again, if they cleared him to return to the game, and then he says, I want to change my visor. Well, if that's such a red flag, then the NFL people, you know, again, they can take over and say, okay, you're out of the game. They take his helmet.
Right.
You can't go back in. So all of this stuff that happened, What subsequently can happen too with these kinds of concussion things is sometimes the symptoms do not manifest themselves until the following day. You know, the game that I referenced when we were talking about Mason Rudolph, the game against the Lions.
Right.
That Ben Roethlisberger concussion, he self-reported that later in the week after the previous game. And so that happens too. I mean, that's the way sometimes these things work. I mean, it's not always a simultaneous, you get hit, now you have a concussion, now you're showing the symptoms and you can't pass, you know, whatever test that they give you and you have to go into the protocol. It doesn't work like that all the time. Sometimes it does. Maybe most of the times it does. But there are instances where it takes some time for those things to manifest themselves. And that's what happened. I think TJ Watt, then the next day, he reported symptoms or whatever. They tested him again and they put him in the protocol. So, I mean, there's no conspiracy here or trying to circumvent the rules, you know, or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, it's just the way it happened. And, you know, once again, you want to complain about the system that the league uses? Okay, go ahead. But it has nothing to do with, you know, what the individual teams might think or want, because it's totally out of their hands.
Well, hopefully TJ Watt will get out of concussion protocol before the game against Indianapolis. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on that as the week progresses towards Saturday. Got a ton of questions to get to for today's Ask and Answer, though, so let's get to it right now, and let's start with Dean Harris from Downington, PA. I saw that Cam Hayward is once again our Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee. They've passed him by too many times, and he is most deserving of this award. Can you tell me the criteria they use to choose the winner of the award and maybe why he hasn't won it yet?
Okay, Dean, I'm going to give you the wording that's on the NFL.com/Man of the Year website. So it's there. It's the league's own definition of the criteria and the procedure. And I'm quoting, the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award recognizes an NFL player for his excellence on and off the field. The award was established in 1970. It was renamed in 1999 after the late Hall of Fame Chicago Bears running back Walter Payton. Each team nominates one player who has had a significant positive impact on his community, representing the best of the NFL's commitment to philanthropy and community impact. 32 players are selected as their team's Man of the Year and become eligible to win the national award. The winner of the award each receives a $250,000 donation to the charity of his choice. All 32 nominees receive up to a $55,000 donation to the charity of choice. All donations are courtesy of the NFL Foundation and Nationwide, the insurance company. The winner of this year's Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year Award will be announced live at NFL Honors on Thursday, February 8th at 9 p.m. Eastern, and it is televised on CBS. CBS being the network this year because CBS has the Super Bowl.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I have no idea why Cam Hayward hasn't won the award. I think he already should have won it. He is by far the most active member of the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of, you know, charity work, community involvement, you know, all that kind of stuff. I would put Cam Hayward, this is my opinion, right up there with Jerome Bettis. And this Franco Harris was before my time, but my understanding of the kind of involvement that he was responsible for, he was also a very, very extremely significant guy in those areas. So I thought Cam Hayward was going to win it last year. I really did. Dak Prescott won it, the Cowboys quarterback. Nothing against Dak Prescott. But, you know, again, it's a vote. And you know, you never know how people are going to vote. But if I had a vote, I'd vote for Cam Hayward. I certainly hope he wins it this year. He's a deserving candidate.
Yeah, no doubt. Hopefully the long wait is over for Cam later on this year in February. Bob Makrowitz from Memphis, Tennessee asks, the Steelers line up in field goal formation apparently to attempt a 60-yard field goal, but instead the ball is snapped directly to Chris Boswell, who punts. Would this punt be legal, or would it be considered a missed field goal?
No. If the ball's snapped directly to Boswell and he just punts it, you know, the ball doesn't hit the ground before he kicks it. you know, any of that kind of stuff. No, it's a punt. And then also, the other team would be, if he punts it and it goes beyond the line of scrimmage and rolls, is rolling around, let's say, around the 5 or 10 yard line, the opposing team can then pick it up and run it because it's a punt. Now, it'll roll around until one of the officials blows it dead, and then it's a dead ball. Or if it goes into the end zone, then it's a touchback. You know, all of the normal punt rules would apply in that situation.
I'm not punting from a 60-yard field goal with Boswell. I know he's got that in his bag. He's going to nail that, no problem. Keith Miller from Canton, North Carolina. My old person memory is that my father took me to a game in Pitt Stadium called the O.J. Simpson Bowl. Pittsburgh played Philadelphia, and the loser would get to draft O.J. first overall. Well, we blew it and won the game 6-3, and then Philly blew it and won a game later on. How accurate is this memory?
It's very accurate, and Keith, let me tell you, I was there too. I was at that game. It was played on October 27th, 1968, and it matched the 0-6 Steelers against the 0-6 Eagles. The game was dubbed the O.J. Bowl because, hey, why else would anyone care about a matchup of winless teams in late October? And that game lived down to those expectations. The Eagles took a 3-0 lead in the second quarter when punter place kicker Sam Baker kicked a 38-yard field goal. But the Steelers came back, and it was a monumental comeback. In the fourth quarter, they won the game 6-3 on field goals of 34 and 15 yards by Booth Lustig. There was such a thing as a 15-yard field goal then because in 1968, the goalposts were still on the goal line.
Right.
So there wasn't
the extra obstacle to have to deal with.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, that was interesting too. But here's some of the statistical lowlights of that game. 5 missed field goals in the game, totally. 11 punts in the game. The Steelers finished the season 2-11-1. The Eagles got to 0-11 before they put together a 2-game winning streak that had ended their season at 2-12. So actually, you know, the Steelers lost fewer games. So the 1969 draft order, this was it after everything, you know, came to a conclusion. Buffalo picked first. They took O.J. Simpson. Atlanta was second. They took George Kuntz, an offensive tackle. Philadelphia picked third. They took halfback Leroy Keyes. He was from Purdue. And the Steelers settled for some defensive lineman from North Texas State called Joe Green. So
what a shame. So close to greatness.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe if any of those, the three teams who picked ahead of the Steelers that year knew anything, they would have picked somebody different. I guess you can say that, you know, O.J. Simpson is a Hall of Famer too. So Buffalo did okay, but, you know, Joe Green transformed the Steelers franchise. So besides being a great player and Hall of Famer, there's that on his resume as well.
John Hughes from Lake City, Florida. There's a good chance that when T.J. Watt's career is over, he will be on his way to Canton. Would Watt be the first player in Steelers history to be elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame without ever being on a team that won a playoff game? I'm sure Watt would be the first to do that.
It always cracks me up when submitters to this are so certain of whatever their particular agenda happens to be.
Yeah, is he done after? Did he just retire? Did I miss that? Is he not allowed to win a playoff game here coming up? Or, I mean,
well,
it's not set
in
stone that he won't win a playoff game yet.
Well, there's that. Plus, there's also the fact that, you know, we just talked about Joe Green, right? And how he changed the franchise. Well, all of that before Joe Green, there were no playoff wins. You know, I mean, and that was a long time. 1933 to 1972, that's 40 years.
Yeah.
And not only was there no playoff wins, there were no playoff games. You know, 1947 is sometimes it's referred to as a playoff game, but it's not a playoff game in what we have come to recognize today as a playoff game. You know, back in 1947, there were two conferences in the NFL, Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, and the winners of each conference would meet in the NFL championship game. That was the only playoff game, so to speak. And in 1947, the Steelers and the Eagles both finished with the same record in the Eastern Conference. So to figure out who got the Eastern Conference's playoff spot or spot in the NFL championship game, there was an extra game played. Okay, the Steelers got crushed 21-0. So, you know, you could say that there was a playoff game before 1972, okay, and technically there was, but it was not a victory, okay? So these are the players in franchise history who are in the Hall of Fame, but who never either, who never played in a playoff game, never appeared, let alone played in one that the Steelers lost, okay? Jack Butler, I'm giving them to you alphabetically too, it's easier this way. Jack Butler, Bill Dudley, John Henry Johnson, Walt Kiesling, Bobby Lane. Now, he had playoff experience and won playoff games, but that came when he was with the Detroit Lions. Johnny Blood McNally and Ernie Stotner. You know, Ernie Stotner, by the way, was the first player in franchise history to have his jersey retired. So, you know, these are significant guys.
Right.
They're in the Hall of Fame. And they never even appeared in a playoff game in a Steelers uniform. So you're not so, John may be sure that Watt would be the first to do that. And as you mentioned, his career isn't over yet. But even if that would happen, he's wrong.
And our final question today comes from Joseph Lushine from Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Zach Gentry played quarterback for the El Dorado Eagles when he was in high school. At 6'8" and 260 pounds, why didn't the Steelers keep him on the practice squad and try to convert him back to quarterback? That's what we need here, Labs, is one more quarterback to throw into the mix for fans to chant.
Well, okay. Again, let's go back to and look at some of the events of Zach Gentry's career. He left high school in 2014. During his freshman year as a Michigan quarterback in 2015, the coach at the time, Jim Harbaugh, told him to move to tight end because that's how he could get to the NFL at that position. Now, you know, obviously Michigan is a significant college football program. And if the coach there tells you, why don't you switch to tight end, you can also take that to mean, we don't think you're good enough as a quarterback here. Okay? So there's that. Because if Gentry really was a top prospect or a legitimate NFL caliber prospect as a quarterback, Michigan's not moving him to tight end because there's no transfer portal back then either. And if you think that this guy could maybe contribute or develop, you know, let's not forget Tom Brady wasn't a slam dunk NFL quarterback as soon as he enrolled at Michigan either. So, you know, these coaches do allow for the development of these players, okay? So what Joseph is suggesting is that 8 years away from the quarterback position, okay, the Steelers should have signed him to the practice squad because, again, he's been at tight end since 2015. Signed him to the practice squad to try to develop him as a quarterback to play the position at the highest level of the sport. Now, you know, I'm a smart aleck. The El Dorado Eagles are located in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Joseph lists his current residence as Rio Rancho, New Mexico. You think they went to high school together, maybe?
You're sniffing something out here.
Or did they know each other? You know, I don't know if Joseph was a high school athlete as well. Maybe he competed against the El Dorado Eagles. Maybe he went to El Dorado High School. But, you know, I don't know. Go Eagles, you know? That's all I have to say about that.
I think it worked out for Zach Gentry, too, making the switch from quarterback to tight end. You might have been right, Harbaugh said it, because you weren't good enough to play tight end or quarterback in Michigan, but it also got him to the NFL. So I'm sure. Yes. I'm sure Gentry wouldn't have changed anything if he could go back in time. That's going to do it for us today on Asked and Answered. Always appreciate you getting your questions into Labs. Get them in now, and maybe you'll hear them read on a future edition. Remember, Steelers game moved up to Saturday this weekend. 4:30 kickoff in Indianapolis on Saturday. Steelers and Colts in a big game with playoff implications. For Bob Labriola, I'm Tom Opperman, and this has been Asked and Answered.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.